Welcome to Stargate SG-1 for the first time, still not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I'm watching Stargate SG-1 for the first time.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I'm watching Stargate SG-1 for the 47th time. Jeff and I are two veteran Star Trek podcasters, which is why we've already thrown a Star Trek reference into this show. A while ago, we joined forces to bring you Babylon 5 for the first time, and now we are doing it again with a show that so many of you out there said that you wanted us to cover, and here we are.
So now we're giving SG-1 the for the first time treatment. What that means is that I'm going to be watching this, me, for the very first time. You get to join me and maybe experience some of those first time memories that you had oh so many years ago.
And while I can't watch this for the very first time because I've seen this show a lot, I am going to be doing something for the first time watching it on this particular watch through, which is looking for those sci-fi messages that we love so much in the for the first time world here. You know, those messages that hold up a mirror to society, give us hope that things can be better in the future, or just tell us how to be better human beings to each other. And I got to tell you, Jeff, I really didn't think the show would be chock full of them, but oh my, so far they really have been.
We got some really good stuff so far.
Yeah.
But even through that stuff, emphasis on the sci-fi messages, because this, Brent, is still not a Star Trek podcast. So here on the For the First Time properties, we enjoy playing games. And one of our favorites is the Rule of Three. The Rule of Three is a game that limits us to no more than three references to Star Trek per episode.
That's it. Three.
Uno, dos, tres. No substitutions, exchanges, every.
And every time we make one of those references, you're going to hear this.
But you know, Jeff, we are now Babylon 5 podcasters, or at least we're burgeoning Babylon 5 podcasters, which means that kind of stuff is on the tip of our tongues. So it's also quite likely we're going to catch some Babylon 5 references. And when we do that, you're going to hear.
Oh, yes.
Brent, we are about to get into the 12th episode, our 11th episode, Stargate SG-1 Bloodlines. Mm-hmm. We came off a banger from last week, an incredible episode. This one's got a high bar, big shoes to fill. Why don't you tell us about this one?
This episode is the 12th episode titled Bloodlines, original air date October 7th, 1997. Today's episode is going to feature the first appearance of several characters, Jeff, that we're going to come to know and love over the course of the show. You'll meet them in due time. And with that, that's really all I got on the preamble here, Jeff. So with that, Jeff, why don't we just jump into this episode? There's really nothing extra to talk about. Hey, if you folks out there are just joining us for the first time, Jeff and I are going to watch this episode right now. If you're watching us on YouTube, you're going to get the reaction video. If you're watching us on Patreon, you're going to get the full unedited reaction video, which is pretty dope.
And if you're listening to us on one of those great audio podcast apps like Good Pods or Apple Podcasts or anything like that, you're about to hear a big whoosh or some other noise and then come back and hear our thoughts after the episode. That's where I'm going to share my first time experience. And Brent is going to share any of those sci-fi messages that happened to be in this episode. So Brent, let's dive in. Let's do Bloodlines.
Chevron 7 locked.
All right, Jeff, well, that was it. We have just watched Bloodlines, you for the first time, me for the 48th time now, I guess. But watching for a first time with a new reason. Jeff, talk to us about Bloodlines. A
couple weeks ago, I said that Teal'c is my favorite character so far. This episode just brought me deeper into that. It's a Teal'c episode.
Yeah.
And we got so much. So just kind of working through, we got these weird flashbacks that I think kind of set up some of the lore, I guess, around, you know, when you become Jaffa, what that looks like. We learned later that it's a ceremony called the Primta that makes that happen. In that initial stuff, we learned that, one, there's a group at Langley that wants a Gould that they can study. And to help make that happen, they're trying to develop a drug that'll rebuild Teal'c's immune system up so they can take his Gould out. I feel like they could have used some more exposition a little bit in the episode. Like, I had to string some stuff together a little bit, but I'm sure that's going to, some stuff around that'll come up again. But wow. So it's been 6 months about, right, since Tilk took off from Chulak, and they've been here before. A lot has happened in that time. We learned he's got a kid, Raytak.
No.
Rayak and Braytak was Rayak is his son. Mm-hmm. Braytak was his first master, his first Jaffa teacher.
Yes. Well, by the way, sir, it is Master Braytak.
Master Braytak, a man of 133 years old.
Yes. Give him his respect. That man's been around for a while.
Oh, a little bit. He's got a couple of years under his belt. And Drayak is his wife.
Yeah.
We didn't know he had a wife or a kid. Now we've met them. So the whole thing was really predicated on, like, the whole reason this happened was Tilk wanted to go there to stop the Primta for Rayak. Wow.
You'll get there.
These names, these are not easy. These aren't easy.
Right.
But yeah, so that's kind of what we got. We learned that this Primtak's a big deal, that the priests carry the goulds, the little goulds larvas and pieces. They have sepulchers that they keep them in. It's very sacred stuff. And the families of Shova, the traders, and other people, I'm assuming, become outcasts. They live in these camps outside the cities in Chulak.
So if I may on that, I mentioned in the show, it's the first time I've ever noticed the staff of the Shova sitting in the middle of the camp. Like at first I was kind of looking, is this just outside of Dryak's home? Because she mentioned even among the outcasts, they are outcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually just makes me wonder, like, what makes people outcast to go in here? Is it being some sort of a traitor, some sort of a whatever, to where all those people are considered traitors, but to do what Tilk did? That, like, is it really that much more different? Or is there another reason? Because that staff was right in the middle of the camp. So I don't know the answer to that, by the way.
Let's say we know that the Gould are gods. They see themselves as gods. They present themselves as gods. People believe that they are gods. And a pretty common theme in most religion when it comes to gods is there's a mechanism where you do wrong by that god and they shun you. They kick you out. They somehow, you know, you're somehow separated, you know, from the rest of the faith community or whatever. And so I got to wonder, like, there's the Tilk level of Shova, which is like ultimate, you know, he's blaspheming. He's actively fighting against them. He's literally living on another planet. But what are the other levels that you can be Shova? Is it as minor as like taking the Apophis's name in vain, you know, or something like that? I don't know. And I don't know if we'll ever find out, but it does really beg the question. There's a lot of Shova, it seems like. So what happened? And then on top of that, how they get there, and are they all traitors, or what makes you an outcast, I guess, is really kind of one of the big questions out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, so Rayak has scarlet fever.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal. We've all but eradicated scarlet fever here on Earth because, like, we used science and medicine and vaccines, and those eradicate diseases. They're good things. So we did that, but here on Chulak, like, that's a common thing, it seemed like. I got the impression that, like, wasn't weird that he was sick.
I love the storytelling device. Like, I'm coming here to stop him from having this Primtop, because just in case you missed it, Jaffa have their own immune system. It just gets obliterated once that Gould comes inside. So if Rayak never has a Gould attached to him, he's just going to go through life with a normal immune system. Cool. It can't take out scarlet fever, though, which they're going to need. So the idea that he needed the Gould just to survive, like, that's something else. I will say this. I have never, I could not look at somebody suffering from scarlet fever and be like, I know scarlet fever when I see it.
I know, right?
I didn't know that. Also, I happened to look it up while the episode was going. Do you know what antibiotics we use for scarlet fever?
I don't.
Good old $4 amoxicillin.
Look at that. We use that for everything.
Literally the medicine for all kids everywhere for everything.
Yeah. It comes in multiple flavors now. You got grape and cherry and all. It's all gross.
Bubble gum, keep it in the fridge, shake it up. You're good to go. That actually is like the one antibiotic that I'd be like, you literally could put that in the pocket of every soldier out there. Like, it's that ubiquitous out there. So
it really set up a lot of really great storytelling pieces in here and pieces of lore. So if we look at what we saw in the open with Teal'c and them trying to develop a drug, a medication to replace his immune system, that's the Earth approach. Compare that to Unchulak, where good luck, kid. You know, you got your immune system, but we don't invest in science. We don't invest in medicine or things like that because the people that matter have Goulds in them and they take care of them. And that creates that culture, right? Where the Primta, where becoming Jaffa is super, like, not only is it a status, but also it guarantees you good health. And I loved that moment. We talked about it while we were watching the episode, but I love the moment where Ryak's about to die and Teal'c doesn't miss a beat. Literally, he's like, you're going to die. I know how to save you. And he's going to take his Gould and put it into Ryak, which one, sacrifices him. Pretty big deal. But what's amazing about that and the whole like mind mess in it is the thing that Teal'c came here to stop is the thing he has to do to save him.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. One thing I'm really starting to notice in Stargate is they're not afraid to put the characters in like total unwinnable situations.
Yeah.
And again, I mentioned this while we were watching it. This is, I think, the third episode where someone had a thing that they desperately wanted, needed, whatever, and then had to give it up to save somebody. We had Daniel, who had all this knowledge, right? Learning about this was last week, I think, with the Torment of Tantalus. I know all this stuff, and I'm learning about the first four and all that.
Yeah.
But if I don't leave and I don't destroy, like, we're going to lose everything, and you know we're going to die. I got to give that up. Before that, we got Thor's hammer, where again it was Daniel who was like, "Here's the thing that can save Sha-Ray. They can save Skara, but I got to save Teal'c, so I got to give this thing up. I have to give it up.
And we got to find another way."
Uh-huh. And now this week, again, it's Daniel. I got this Gould. We stole it and we can give it to the dudes at Langley and then we'll be good. Oh, shoot. Now I got to save Teal'c and I got to give this thing up. I just think I'm very struck that in a handful of episodes, three of them, a substantial percentage, have had that as like the theme at the end. Like,
and Daniel's been the hero in every single one.
Every time, giving the thing up. I think it says a lot, you know, and
yeah.
We talked about it in the Chevron conversation last week, but I think it shows up again here of just like, you know, what good is a thing if you have no one to share it with?
Yeah.
That's kind of where we were at with Ryak and Teal'c, where what good is Teal'c saving Ryak if we don't save Teal'c when we can? Like, how does this even make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Super great. Really enjoyed this episode. I loved the situations that they put into this thing. But I think the big takeaway in this one moving forward is Teal'c's not alone. There is a developing fifth column among Jaffa. Braytak is one of the key ones, but there is unrest. There is trouble in Paradise.
In case you missed it, Braytak being Teal'c's first Jaffa master, Braytak is the one who really brought Teal'c over to the Jaffa or false gods.
Like, he planted all those seeds, right? So that when the opportunity presented itself, he would jump. Like, Braytak, I got the impression this has been a long time for Braytak. Like, he's really seen this like this for a long time.
Yeah.
But he's well respected. You know, he's got status, and so he's having to really keep it.
He's had to play this game his whole life. You know, and he's been sowing and planting and watering and keeping and tending, but he's not the guy to push it forward. It's somebody else, which is an interesting lesson. That's an interesting deep dive that is not necessarily in this particular episode, but and when you think about it, that's an interesting talk.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Before we gate into the rest of this episode, did you know you're missing most of the content from this podcast? Stargate SG-1 for the first time has an active and exciting Patreon that you can join right now by clicking the link in the show notes. Not only will you get access to the full, unedited podcast and reaction videos, you'll also be able to join a growing, vibrant, maybe even an intergalactic community. Subscribers even get access to all of our content from Babylon 5 for the first time. Don't miss out on this content and the amazing people. Just click the link in the show notes. Tilk thinks you should do it right now.
Indeed.
It is that concept of the greater, oh gosh, you say the greater good, and that always means something bad. It's that concept of progress and moving forward and understanding that each one of us is a step along the way. And Braytek, I don't know if we'll see more of it, but I think for him, taking personal fulfillment in knowing that he's moved the needle.
Yeah.
Like he's not the one that toppled the gods, but he moved the needle. And that's enough for him to, you know, keep him going. Was there someone that planted those seeds in Braytek, you know, who had that same vision of, you know, and so it's just step over generations.
I cannot answer that question right now.
It's fair enough. Fair enough. But what we know is those seeds have paid off. Tilk's doing the thing and Braytek's continuing to train and plant those seeds of false gods. So that's it for my first time reaction on this one. Brent, what did you get for sci-fi messages in this one?
Well, but before we go on, I didn't catch any For Crying Out Louds or Daniel death scenes or anything else. So
same,
we're not adding to that. There. Okay. This was an interesting episode. There was a really clear, I mean, you could pull this straight out of Gene Roddenberry's script. Like DC Fontana writes this script where Daniel's walking away from the little sepulcher pool pond thing, and he's about to turn around and shoot him, and Sam just looks at him and says, if you kill them when they're this vulnerable, then we are no better than the Gould. And Daniel goes, yeah, you're right, turns around, takes three steps back, and then turns around and shoots the hell out of it, and he's like, whatever. Right? And here's the thing, I do not believe that this is the thrust of the episode. It is something to pull from it. Like, it is so bonk you over the head, you can't miss this particular line, right? But the thing is, I don't know that I agree with it. Like, is there a possibility for these larvae to grow up into Gould and not be bad?
Okay.
Does good exist within the Gould gene pool as a people group and not be bad?
On that.
Uh-huh.
Tilk has brought that up before, an episode or two ago. Oh, maybe it's a good ghoul. Maybe
it's a good ghoul. At least introduce the idea. If they are, then I'm 1,000% with Sam. But if they're not, you know what this almost goes back to? Do you remember the episode of iBorg from Next Generation when they captured a Borg drone, got left behind, and they're like, what if we make it our pet? What if we make it a good Borg? What if we do good stuff with it? And they're like, you can't.
It's Borg.
You can't do good stuff. It's Borg. There's just nothing you can do. And they went through. It was a phenomenal episode. But it definitely goes to that idea of, is there hope for any of these larvae to be good? And if not, do you still have the right to kill them when they're like this? You know, but I'm kind of with Daniel on this one. Like, nope, take them out. Take it, get them now before they get you. Like, do I have a problem when a wasp is building a nest and I see that wasp nest is full of eggs? Do I have any problem going up there and spraying that wasp thing down? No, I do not. Do I have any problems with this? Honestly, no, I don't. But these guys, these larvae might be a little more sentient than that wasp up there. Maybe, possibly, I don't know.
Maybe.
But here we talk about what is the message of the episode. I think this one comes down to a single word that we heard way at the beginning. How do we trust you now? And we see it with Tilk and Jack. Like, dude, how can I trust you after this? Well, you did this. You didn't tell us about them because you didn't know if you could trust us. And he asked a question, but now how can we trust you? Like, you swore to us that there was no ties. How can we now trust you? And then when we see Jack talking to Hammond, echoes that exact same thing. How can we trust? What do you mean this is the case? And I love that Jack took up Teal'c's banner in that point. Like, yeah, you're right, General, but was he right to not trust us? Do we not trust him? So I'm going to just kind of qualify that as the entire SGC and Teal'c. How can you trust each other after what's just happened? I think there's also a big deal here, a big similarity between Teal'c and Dreyak. Teal'c has done this thing which has put Drayak and Ryak in a horrible situation, awful situation. How can she trust him? What I love about this is, especially when Teal'c is Gouldless and he's just laying down, and here's Drayak. She has Teal'c's head in her lap. Mm-hmm. Like, that's her man. That's her spouse. That's her love. Like, that's her guy. And no matter how mad she's been at him, she tried to rip his head off when we first saw her. That's still her guy. You know what I mean? How can that trust still be restored and be there? I don't know that this, I think this is another one of those examples where they sort of put it out there, but then they didn't really discuss it. They didn't really kind of go back and forth with it, because there could have been like a piece of, how do you trust? You got to be vulnerable. You got to tell each other. You got to bring each other into your confidences. You've got trust. Trust is something that you have to decide to do. Like, I'm going to trust you regardless of that. I trust your heart. I trust your motives, that you're not against me. And even if that means that you put me in a compromising situation, that doesn't mean that I've lost all my trust. That doesn't mean that I have to stop trusting you. And you and I were having a conversation not too long ago, almost about this rule of not assigning motives to people.
Right.
I trust your heart. You know, when things happen, why did he do that? Why did he say it with that voice? What did he really mean when he did that? Rather than just going, oh, he said this and that's actually what he meant. Just telling people the truth and being there. So, I feel like I've kind of wandered around it, because I think the show sort of wandered around it and never really nailed it. But I love that line from Carter. I do think that this idea of trust, when we see it displayed in a few different, and then here's another one between Teal'c and Braytak. And that trust was as rock solid as it's ever been. There was no barriers there. And then you even maybe look at Teal'c and Ryak. I mean, Ryak's his dad. That's just his dad. He's going to do whatever his dad says. Do you see the eyes he looked at with his dad? Like,
that's great.
I'll do whatever he says. Yeah, that's my dad. So I'm going to rate this on a scale of 0 to 5 chevrons as to how strong the message is. I didn't think the message was very strong. Now, I'm just rating the message. I'm not talking about the quality of episode itself. You're going to do that in just a moment. But I'm going to give this one 1.5 chevrons.
I think that's a good rating, really, because I think really looking at the Drayak and Teal'c piece, we talked about this during the episode where she really came across as a true believer when Teal'c first showed up. You know, she was furious. She went out of her way to find a Gould so that, you know, Ryak could go through the Primtah. And we were led to really believe that she hated him, despised everything that he left for them, and she was trying with all of her heart to get back into God's good graces. Mm-hmm. The episode kind of continued, and there were these little moments, you know, where we learned more, but I felt like there was never the moment where she was like, bro, I've been having to like keep this facade up for a long time. You know, it was literally like you said, just like from hate to we got to save our kid to, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose you and I've loved you this whole time, you know? And
right.
It works at a narrative pace, you know, like you can track it, but to really pull that message of trust out of it doesn't come. Because I think when I think about establishing trust, I think about risk. In order for me to help you trust me, I have to take a risk, share a thing. Offer a thing, you know, and that risk might just be the risk of rejection. That risk might be really serious, where I'm sharing a thing or putting my safety in your hands. But without risk, there can't be trust. And we saw that with Teal'c. There was a risk. If you know about my family, you'll believe I'm compromised and none of this will work. You'll send me back. You'll kill me. You'll experiment on me, something. So for him to open up and show that, and Jack picked this up, when he asked, he's like, hey, how can we trust you now? And again, the episode didn't show this, but we saw the result of it. Teal'c was like, I'm imagining Teal'c was like, hey, I'm telling you now, like taking the risk, my man, like we had spent time together. I have a level of trust. Now I'm going to take a risk and hope that develops more trust. But
yeah,
I think just like in your explanation, I had to piece a lot of that together. It was in the episode, but the episode didn't show it.
So I rated it 1.5 chevrons. You, my friend, get to take this episode and place it in the 100% completely accurate, definitive ranking of season one of Stargate SG-1. Jeff, our top five for the season. I'm going to go bottom to top this time. I'm going to start with number five. Our number five episode is The Broken Divide. Number four is Brief Candle. Three is Cold Lazarus. Two is The Nox. And one is Torment of Tantalus. There's a few others below that. But Jeff, where do you place Bloodlines? I'm really curious to see about this, because when you do this, I don't want to influence your opinion, but I'll tell you where I place this one as soon as you're done with your ranking.
I love this episode. At this point in SG-1, I feel like if you want Jeff to like this, make it a Tilk-centric episode. I love learning about his history. I love having him on screen. I love the character. I like the depth that they're giving him and his story. It's very interesting stuff. This added to it also really getting more of an insight into the Gould and understanding that a little bit more. Plus, it was good TV. Like, it was a good episode that had action. It had humor. It had messages. Like, it had all the pieces, and it was a really good time. Is it Torment of Tantalus good? No, it is not.
Right.
It's also not First Commandment or Emancipation bad. So,
right.
And so I'm really landing in this 5-6 area, Broken Divide, Children of the Gods for me. And I feel bad that I feel bad putting things on top of Children of the Gods, because, and we talked about this before, probably the greatest series opener to date, you know, for television out there to date when this came out, right? Like, so good. But then I think about The Broken Divide, which is a good episode that offered up a lot of really big stuff. I mean, just thinking about The Touched and all that stuff. But my ultimate test on this is what episode did I enjoy, or what episode made me feel, and I would watch it again. In between Broken Divide and Children of the Gods, Bloodlines wins, and it's going to be our new number five.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, that is 100% accurate, immutable, definitive.
It is. But I'm also curious where in the other not so definitive list you would have
put it. Yeah, I got to be honest. This is an episode that I'm okay to watch. I'm also okay to skip. Huh. It's not one of my favorite episodes. This, to me, if I were to place it in this ranking, I would put it, you're right, it is, there are tiers to this list. There's First Commandment and Emancipation, which are awful.
Yeah.
Awful episodes. Regret making those episodes. And then there's just cream of the crop episodes, Torment of Tantalus, The Nox. I would not have placed Cold Lazarus up there, but I understand why you did. Personally, I like Thor's Hammer a lot, but as I've said, I don't know if I like it because of the merits of its episode by itself or because of what I know comes later, right? I can't separate those in my mind right now. Children of the Gods is, it's a phenomenal series pilot. Like, so those to me are just so well done episodes. Can watch those. And then there's this middle set of episodes that are great season one episode. You take this and put it in season one of any sci-fi show of the 90s, and this is a standout episode from that season. Because let's be honest, first season episodes are not always the best. So to me, this is like a 7 or 8 episode. Even just sticking with our ranking here, which has Children of the Gods at 6, Thor's Hammer at 7, Enemy Within. I would put it above Enemy Within. I would put it above Cold Lazarus. I'm not a huge fan of that episode, but I get why you put it up where you did. I just wouldn't put it up that high because I don't want to watch it. You know, because I'd never want to watch it again.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But if I'm looking at Broken Divide, Brief Candle, I'm going to watch those before I watch Bloodlines because I just enjoyed those episodes. But I mean, The Nox, Torment of Tantalus, those are just standout episodes, and we've got a few more coming up here soon. So
I can see this episode too being kind of similar to Thor's Hammer, where there are things planted here that then develop in bigger, richer ways down the road. Like we met this introduced us to characters and some concepts of the culture is really what this accomplished. So I can see that.
I mean, you met Braytak, you met Dryak, you met Ryak. I have no problems telling you, you will see all three of those characters again.
Cool.
They are not one and done. You will see them again. And certainly there is a setting up. It's not even a setting up. See, like, that's the thing, you know, in serialized television, especially with like Babylon 5, we watch a lot of episodes. Well, this sets up what's to come. I don't think Stargate was made like that. Stargate was not, hey, we're going to go over here, so we got to plant it here. Stargate's just like, hey, we're going to write this episode. And then when they're later, they're going, hey, we need a few episodes. Hey, you remember that story we had back there? What if we pulled that into this one? What if we revisited that planet and came back over here? What, you remember that adventure? What if we checked back in with Ryak and Drak and see what was going on with them? What if, you know what I mean? Like that, I think, is kind of how a lot of this plays out. But there is this thing of, from week to week with Stargate, like, what happens in one episode? This show is clearly episodic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in one episode has the potential, I'm not saying it always does, but it has the potential to impact all future episodes going forward.
It's episodic consequences.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. I like it. All right, Jeff. Well, I believe that is going to do it for us here. Watching Bloodlines. Would you like to know what next week's episode is called?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. It is called Fire and Water. Jeff, if you don't even want to bother taking a guess at what this could be, I wouldn't blame you, because there's not a lot with that one. But go ahead so we can all laugh at you.
Well, I just have a question about, is there any music in this one?
No.
So it's not like a song?
Earth and Wind are not a part of it. No.
Oh, I was going to say, it's not a song of fire and water?
Ice? No. Sorry.
I have a hard time not going to Fire and Ice on this one. Yeah, I don't know. Fire and Water, hot and cold, conflicting something. I can't even get specific. There's nothing to this one, right? Like, I'll tell you what, super excited to find out.
Listen, here's what I'll say. This one, I don't mind doing this. I really don't mind doing this. This one, you will understand when you watch it, but this has echoes. This has similarities to the Voyager episode Caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the pilot of Next Generation?
Encounter at Farpoint.
That right there.
Okay.
I'm just going to set those two out there for you. And maybe not even Encounter at Farpoint.
I was hoping we're going to get some Groppler Zorn into this.
No, we're not. Sorry. More Caretaker. Yeah.
Are you thinking more like, from Next Generation, like a Tin Man kind of a thing?
No.
I'm imagining like these bigger, higher kind of aliens.
No, definitely. Yeah. Encounter at Farpoint. I'm going to go Encounter at Farpoint and certainly a little bit of Caretaker-esque stuff. We'll talk about that more next week.
Yeah.
After you've seen the episode, maybe you just tell me, no, Brent, that's actually awful and that has nothing to do with any of it. So anyway, that is going to do it for us, guys, this week on Stargate SG-1 for the first time. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, share, all those sorts of things. And please, wherever you are, don't forget to leave us a rating, a review, drop a comment down below if that's what's going on. And make sure you let other people know about this show. Share it with somebody who loves Stargate SG-1, or maybe somebody who just, like Jeff over there, needs to discover it and wants to discover it along with somebody else for the very first time. So with that, we are going to go ahead and get out of here for this week. Next week,
hey, Brent.
Fire and Water and Jeff.
Listen, I know you're trying to wrap things up, but I want to let you know, I really, really need to get going. I have Young out there to teach of battle and of false gods.
Crying out loud, man. Just get out of here.